Welcome to part two of our conversation with Ellen McNeil about the soldier on the other side. Let me ask you this. When you went into this initially, and maybe this has changed over the years, but what was your goal when you started investigating the dead and people's paranormal experiences?
Like I said, after what I went through with not having anyone believe me and not being able to talk to people, because if I did, they were like, okay, all right, Ellen, yeah, all right. And just kind of patting you on the head going, okay, she's grieving and everything. And I'm like, I wish we had cell phones back then that I could have just taken pictures of what this room looked like and all the broken things that were in here.
Sure.
And I said, I never want to have people not believed and not listened to. You know, everybody has a different experience. Sometimes it's explainable. Sometimes you can say, oh, that's not what it is. It's this. And it's not paranormal. And, you know, I mean, when they, like on TAPS, when they'd be like, well, we're going to debunk this, we're going to debunk that. I never really understood how far that goes. You know, when you go out of your way to find a reason for what's going on, and then you can say, you know what, we couldn't debunk this. It's not your pipes. It's not a raccoon. It's not squeaky floor. You have something here.
Either
somebody that you don't know passed away in the house, whether it's a violent death, like my brother, they don't know they're gone. You know, as far as he knows, he's still sitting on the truck. You know, it's like giving people the power to say, I know this happened. It happened for a reason, and I'm just going to embrace this. May never happen again, but this person reached out to me.
So,
and
would you say your approach, because it sounds like it differs quite a bit from a lot of people that I've heard over the years, and everybody has different approaches, is more so, it's not necessarily crossing someone over, it's not necessarily, you know, confirming that it's going on, it's more so make peace and recognize not only that the living are having these experiences, but recognizing that the dead are having these experiences as well.
Exactly. They don't know. They don't understand what happened. And my concern is, as a mom, as a friend, as a Taurus that's very passionate about stuff, you need to know that somebody is listening to you. You know, I don't feel qualified to pass people over. I don't stand there and go, oh, cross into the light, all are welcome.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're suffering, you're reaching out because you don't know what's happened. You have family waiting for you. So don't be afraid to go. Go be with them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's to help them, too. I mean, we had some, oh, my God, some messed up stuff happen in Gettysburg. And it's like all these men and women that were killed, and they were babies. You know, they were teenagers. They don't know they're gone. You know, you go out and you're fighting your own family, and it tears you apart. But when you can tell a client, I'm listening to you, I believe what you're telling me, because I have gone through everything to try to debunk it. So with that being said, then I have to go paranormal. I have to figure out why this person is reaching out to you. Why are these things happening in your house? And there are many times that we'll get a client information form filled out, and I like to call the town historian and find out about the land that the house is on.
Mm-hmm.
Is there there's so much Indian burial ground that's just creepy. And then, are they near a cemetery? Yes, two of them have been moved, and all they did was move the tombstones, just like Poltergeist. You left the bodies, didn't you? They're still there, and they're pissed.
What happens, though, you know, obviously there's many cases where it's something peaceful, like your brother, that, you know,
yeah.
he means no harm, obviously. And in many cases, there's the loved ones that follow the other loved ones around. But what about when people have something that is there that, you know, it's not as easy to make peace with as it would be a sibling?
Okay. This is when Mother Ellen steps in and says, listen, you are upsetting the people that own this house now. This is no longer your house. You are upsetting them. You're being disrespectful, and you're frightening the kids, and I won't put up with that. You have a choice. Either you can go on your own, we'll get somebody in to get rid of you, or you be respectful and you share this house. They know that you were here before them, but you're not here now. There's a new family, new everything, so it's up to you. You've got a choice. You can stay in the house and hang out and watch over this family and live together, or you have to go.
Have you ever been in cases where whatever is there says, I'm not going to follow your suggestions and I'm not going to go either?
No, I'm pretty forceful
when I
start talking like that.
Well, you know, it's interesting just, that is, you know, as simple as that is, I've been doing this show now for almost 10 years, and it's one of those things where I remember when I first started hearing the suggestion of people just speaking out loud and saying, ask it to leave, ask it to cohabitate, ask it to just be peaceful with you.
Yeah.
And to me, initially, if you're not familiar, it sounds like there's no way that would work. That's one of the best things to do.
Trust me, when I do mom voice, you listen. You know, it's like, you've got to be respectful.
Yeah.
You know, they are respecting you,
mm-hmm.
and they are upset that you're upset. You're disrespecting them where they are respecting you, and they don't know what to do to make you peaceful so they can be peaceful.
What,
you know?
What exactly happens now? I mean, here's a question for you, and I'll ask specifically in your case, because obviously you've had your brother following you around now for so many years.
Yeah.
Do you believe that now, obviously, because of all this time, he understands that he is dead and he knows what he's doing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So once someone on the other side has that understanding, what does that mean for them?
We did up in Mount Washington, we did, there was a big, not a convention, a conference mm-hmm. with Michael Parry and his wife, who I'd heard of, didn't know anything about them really, but his wife, I don't know what you call it, she draws portraits of people that come into her head, and he is unbelievable as a psychic. I just absolutely, I've never seen anything like him. I just, you know, and I'm very skeptical, because mm-hmm. I was like, okay, you know, is this going to be just entertainment or what? So we all went, and we were like three rows back. And, you know, he's talking, we didn't fill out anything. He had no idea who we were. And he went, whoa. He goes, good God. He goes, who's Ellen? And I was like, what? He goes, and he's like, you're Ellen? And I said, yeah. And he said, oh, my God. He goes, this is your brother. He says, your brother is coming through here. And he was staggering. He said, I have never had anybody come through so hard. He wants to talk to you. And, of course, and I'm sitting there, and I am, like, shaking like a leaf.
Mm-hmm.
And he came over to our row, and he looked at my daughter, and he went, okay. so you're Sarah. He goes, this is Beck. And he was like, slow down, slow down. He's like, I'm trying to tell her all this stuff. He told me how he was killed, the day he was killed, what happened. He said, I have to tell you this. He wants you to stop grieving. He said, you're breaking his heart because you miss him so much and it's tearing you apart. And he said, it makes him so sad that you're so hurt. And he said, he is mentoring soldiers that die and come up there. And he's like the welcoming committee.
Sure.
When they're up there. He's like, he has a purpose and he is happy and he wants you to be happy. And, you know, I mean, I lost it.
Sure, yeah.
I was just, because people that were there know the story. These people don't know me. You know, and I had to get up and go to the ladies' room and just, you know, try to compose myself because I was bawling like a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I came back. And he went, oh, no, he's not done. He's not done. And he said, okay, he says, your mother is still alive, and I guess she is a real hard ass. And I said, yep. And he goes, your father has passed. And he said, he's like, he watches over you. He knows the stuff that you do. And he is so proud of you. And I was like, oh, my God. And I looked over at Michael's wife, and I said, if she is doing a portrait, I have this beautiful picture of him. It's like a double portrait
mm-hmm.
with him in his army hat. And it was like the only time he wasn't being goofy. It was the only picture I have of him that he's serious.
Yeah.
This is a guy who thought that plastic dog poop was the greatest thing ever invented and would put it in my bed, put it on my pillow, I'd open up the refrigerator, it would be sitting there on my sandwich, and he just thought that was the greatest thing. And then when they came up with plastic vomit, that was it. I was screwed. Always doing something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm talking about you wherever you are. But he, after the conference, he came up to me and he was crying. I was crying, and he was like, "Be happy. He wants you to be happy because he's doing what he needs to be doing up there." And he said, "It makes him so sad that you miss him so much." I said, well, I can't help it. He was handsome. What can I say?
Go ahead.
He was 8 years older than me, so we always just missed each other,
mm-hmm.
you know, in school and missed each other, you know, when he went to college. And I just treasure the time that I was able to be with him. Because everybody loved him.
Sure. And obviously, grief is something that can't just be, you know, turned off with a switch.
Ooh,
him giving you
again,
that permission, did that...
If you can't, you've got to get the anger out.
Yeah.
And for me, it was blaming myself.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody said, do you know what you have? And I was like, no. And they said, you have survivor's guilt,
mm-hmm.
which I had never heard of. And I read up on it, and I was like, oh, my God. Yeah, I certainly do. You know, when all you can do is blame yourself because you're still here.
Sure.
And this one wonderful person is gone.
Did him giving you the permission to stop grieving help you in that process by knowing that he himself said to you from the other side, Ellen, it's okay?
I had 400 people in a room see this happen. And I was like, all right, this was so powerful. It was so amazingly powerful. And I said, I'm not going to stop missing you, but I will stop blaming myself for having guilt. And that helped. And in Gettysburg, because a lot of my friends know the story, and they're like, you need to talk about this instead of keeping it all inside you. Mm-hmm. So, do you know Jack Kenna?
I do not.
Okay, all right. He is like a brother to me, and he is on our team, and he's on a ton of paranormal shows, and he's just amazing, and I love him to pieces. And he was talking to me, and he was like, you're going to be going to Gettysburg. Why don't you talk about your brother? And I was like, oh, God, I can't do that. I haven't talked about him in public at all. Mm-hmm. You know, since 1971, I haven't talked about him.
Yeah.
And he said, you need to share this story. He said, you've got the grief, you've got the paranormal experiences, and he said, what you have gone through is amazing. So it took me another year before I said, okay, I will do it. Mm-hmm. And so I did a lecture at the Gettysburg Battle Bash, which was this past weekend in Gettysburg. And I started talking about him, and I looked at the people that were there, and there's grown men sitting there with tears streaming down their face, and because they understood,
yeah,
you know, and they knew how hard it was for me to talk about him, and I had brought up a bunch of pictures of him, and of course one of them falls over while I'm talking, and I said, see, he always gets the last word in, you know, and it really helped me. And people were like, why don't you write a book about him? And yeah, I don't know, it might
be, you know, really good for your grieving process too.
Yeah, it just, you know, like I said, I can't bear the thought of somebody going through,
sure,
pain like that.
Yeah.
You know, now you can go to therapists. You can talk about it. There are people that will listen to you and not judge you and, yeah, tell you you're overreacting, or that, no, that didn't really happen when he died. Yeah, it did happen. Yeah, and that did happen on the highway with the state trooper.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many weird things, and to be at this lecture with the psychic, mm-hmm, and have that happen, and this is a total stranger to me. And I actually asked Grant and Jason, did you tell him about me? And they're like, no, you know, no. mm-hmm. And I didn't want to feel like they were trying to help me, mm-hmm, by telling him, hoping that something would happen.
Sure.
You know, they're like, absolutely not. And, you know, if it wasn't for them, there would be no spirits in New England. Mm-hmm. And the fact that we have been together for 11 years, and I want to help people. I don't want to go to locations that a million people have already gone to.
Sure.
I don't need to put another notch in a belt. I want to help people that cannot understand or explain what's happening in their lives, what's happening in their homes, and help them. You know, it's what I want to do.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Ellen McNeil about her story of her brother, the soldier on the other side. A big thank you to her for sharing her experiences with us on the program today. And thank you for supporting the show and keeping us on the air. We would not exist without you. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.